It's a pleasure to have you listening to my show today. My sincerest desire is to have you get something from it that will make your life richer, fuller, and safer. My name is Reverend Wynn Henderson. As an ordained Christian minister and a retired medical doctor, I have a dual perspective to bring you content to solve problems in your life. This podcast is the longest-running, single-hosted, spiritually-based radio internet talk show in America. We've been on the air for over 20 years. I bring you information about the disease of addiction, your purpose in life, and investigative reporting on truth just below the surface. We're going to do a program today on Alzheimer's disease. Our guest is Carlin Maddox. Carlin is an experienced journalist. He wrote for the nationally recognized St. Petersburg Times, now called the Tampa Bay Times, before founding in 1984, editing and publishing for 26 years, a business magazine for the Tampa Bay region. He's also written a book, which we'll be talking about today, A Path Revealed, How Hope, Love, and Joy Found Us Deep in a Maze Called Alzheimer's. Today, Carlin is a sought-after author, speaker, and blogger, sharing the hard-won experience arising from his family's experience. His wife, Martha, was a highly energetic and confident woman and a civic activist who served on the St. Petersburg City Council for 6 years in the 80s. She ran for an open seat in the Florida State Legislature the year before she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 97. They had three children, now all in their 40s, and they have five delightful grandchildren. Beginning when Martha turned 50, our family lived through Alzheimer's for 17 years up until 2014. In some ways, though not as intensely, we're still living through it. Carlin, it's great to have you on the program today.
Wynn, thank you very much for the invitation. I appreciate it.
Last month was Alzheimer's Awareness Month, I believe.
Yes, it was, November.
And we wanted to get out a show in November, but had so many other things on our plate. So you and I have something in common. You have more of it than I do. You went through Alzheimer's with your wife for 17 years. I went through it for 3 years, the last 3 years of my father's life, where I was the primary caregiver most of the 24-hour day. And so I have first-hand experience on dealing with this issue of Alzheimer's disease. I just wanted to let you know so that you know that you're not talking to somebody who's never heard of it before. Okay, so let's talk about you and Martha. Back when you were in the first grade, you say that you learned a lesson that helped you immeasurably as a healthcare provider. And what was that lesson?
Yes, I mean, and I think it's a lesson that most of us learn in the first grade or thereabouts, where we just come up to the street and the street guard there just basically we're supposed to stop and we're supposed to look to see if there are any cars coming and just listen. And that lesson of stop what you're doing, pay attention to what your spouse or your loved one is trying to convey to you, whether they can talk or not. It's just very important, but it's not something that I learned immediately. When I thought we could go on for a while communicating the way we'd always communicated and living the way we'd always lived, but I learned pretty quickly that that was just not going to be the case. I remember my daughter, Rachel, after we were 2 to 3 years into this, she was still in college, came home to me sometimes just very upset, says, I just can't deal with this with mommy. And she tells me later that I had shared with her, said, Rachel, you just got to learn to step into your mommy's world now and try to understand where she is and what she's thinking, not argue with her if you know that she's wrong, make sure she's safe, and just be very attentive to the surroundings and to Martha's feelings as best you can at that point. And that's it in a nutshell, Wynn.
That's really good advice, and I learned that with my father because mainly he loved to eat. And as long as I would bring him food, he was fairly happy. But sometimes he got anxiety and out of sorts. So I had a pretty easy job sometimes by just bringing him some little snack or whatever like that. Unlike me, he never gained any weight, which was good.
Yeah.
Now, you've gotten advice, I'm sure, over that 17-year period from numerous different people, and you write about it in your book. What's the best advice that you remember getting?
Certainly one of the best. I don't remember how deep we were into this. And I was, just as a background, I grew up and running our magazine and trying to be a father and a husband. I guess you would call me a perfectionist. And so I found myself beating myself up a good bit because I couldn't get Martha to respond the way I wanted her to respond. And a good friend at the time, just who had been through something similar, just said, Carlin, you just got to learn to be gentle on yourself and got to be, and in as a consequence, be gentle with Martha and just take care of yourself. You're not going to be perfect with this. You're not going to have all the answers with this. Nobody will have all the answers. So be gentle. And that's certainly one of the things I heard that just helped me slow down and pay attention to what was going on.
You said in your media profile that you received a great gift once while living through this crisis. Can you tell me about what that gift was?
Yeah, that came from our two oldest children. When Martha was diagnosed, two of our children were still in college and one was in high school. And when David and Rachel graduated from college and returned to the Tampa Bay area, St. Pete and Tampa, after about a year, they came to me and they said, Daddy, we would like to give you a weekend, a month off. And I said, are you sure? And they said, yes. And so I took them up on that pretty quickly. And I spent that weekend, a month, usually at a nearby monastery, St. Leo Abbey, and would go up there about an hour away and just sit out in the orange groves they had there and vent and pray and walk and cry and cut up and have a good time with the brothers who were there, and just didn't have to be responsible for that weekend for Martha. And I would leave work Friday afternoon and come home Sunday afternoon. And it was just a magnificent time. And that went on, I'm guessing, for 5 or 6 years when I was able to, while I was still working, while we were going through all this, I was able to, and fortunate to be able to hire someone to be with Martha during the day after she began to need that. And so I wasn't there during the day. I was there during the night, but she was always on my mind and just ready to stand at the ready to get a phone call during the day if that was necessary. It never came that I remember. But just being able to just take the straps off my shoulder and be able to go up there and sleep and rest and do all the other things I mentioned was just a magnificent gift, one that I'll always remember.
Yeah, and during those times when you're the primary caregiver like I was, I found that having a respite from that responsibility was one of the greatest things. If I could have 4 hours off that I could go shopping or do something and not
be, exactly,
you know, yeah. It really is good to have someone that's able to give you a little time off.
And that was, it was very hard for me in the beginning, Wynn, to ask for help. And of course, our kids initiated this with me, but just to ask friends or relatives for help, just to give me a break during the course of the week, or during the course of the month, because I thought I could do it all. I hadn't come across anything that I just couldn't handle. And Martha was the same way in her activities. And it was it's just very important to be able to get that, to be able to have a friend of Martha's be with her, have her go shopping, or just go out walking on the beach or whatever. Just very important to call on people. I know that right after Martha was diagnosed, I asked the doctor if he knew of any support groups, caregiver support groups, and he said he knew of one, but he just recommended that I not participate in that because most of the participants, spouses were or loved ones, were well advanced along the path, and he thought it would just depress me more than it would help me, so I did not. And there just weren't many support groups back in 1997. I call that the dark ages at this point as far as Alzheimer's disease and how to handle it and how to deal with it. There's just a lot more information, a lot more support today than there used to be.
Right, and you find a lot of people with new ideas to think about as to the cause of Alzheimer's disease, what you could possibly do with respect to diet or supplements. And so
yes,
there's a lot of information out there for people who want to research it.
Yes. One doctor that I interviewed for my blog at one point had, he was just strongly urging, and he said, the results were fairly clear that it would not cure Alzheimer's, but exercise and being up on the Mediterranean diet were good preventives, or at least would extend the time outward that before they would just be consumed with the disease. And so he was with the Cleveland Clinic. And so that there's others who got research, and supposedly there is a medication now that may alter the but there's a good bit of questioning about it, and it is not cheap by any means. So I will just see. We'll just have to see. It's been approved by the FDA. We'll just have to see how that plays out over time with folks.
Do you remember the name by chance?
I do not. I'm sorry. I don't remember the name.
Yeah.
It's a medical name that you guys come up with these names. I just can't keep them all in my mind.
Well, the reason that medicines have weird-sounding names and everything is to keep the people who are not doctors away from thinking they're doctors because they can't pronounce the names of the medical terms. That's my
well, it's keeping me away, that's for sure.
You said, all my life I thought that illness and disease were physical issues only and had to be dealt with as such. But I soon discovered in Alzheimer's, as I now think, with any serious crisis, that there are embedded emotional, psychological, and spiritual issues that need to be resolved as best we can if we want to experience any kind of healing. Issues like fear, guilt, stigma, confusion, bitterness, anger, depression. Can you enlarge on that thought?
Yeah. I considered our neurologist that we were dealing with to be very empathetic and compassionate. But that was about as he put us up on an experimental drug for a time, which went nowhere. But there was no guidance on dealing with the emotions that you're talking about. And I was certainly filled with anxiety. Martha was certainly filled with anxiety. When she got the diagnosis, I was with her. The doctor he could have been a stand-in for Mr. Spock on Star Trek. He was cold. He just sort of delivered the news. And this was a different doctor than our regular neurologist. And we just got out of that office as quick as we could. And when we got home, and we had a long cry, Wynn, and as soon as it was over, Martha said, "I do not want to tell anyone." I mean, the stigma with Alzheimer's or mental disabilities is still quite strong, even after all this time. But back then in 97, I don't want to tell anyone. I don't want to tell our children. I don't want to tell my parents, or my friends. And that was just very hard to honor that, but I did the best I could. There was one man that she was willing to talk to on this. And that was a retired Presbyterian minister who had married us and baptized a couple of our children and had been good friends with Martha before we got married. And his name was Lacey Harwell. So I called Lacey to come and visit with us. And he did. He said, "I'll be there tomorrow." And he did. And after we broke the news to him, he just broke down crying. I mean, this was a big hulk of a man, 6'4" and about 270 pounds. And I was sitting beside Martha when we broke the news to him on a couch, and he was in a chair, and he asked to swap positions. And he just went over and put his arm around Martha and just sat there for a while. And then he said, "You know, I have sent a lot of my friends of one crisis or another to the Sisters of Loretta community in Kentucky. And there's the retreat director there whose name was Sister Elaine Prevalet. And she's a good friend of mine. And I would just encourage you to think about going to visit with her. I don't know what the result would be, but I'm sure it would be meaningful for you." And so we did. And that was sort of the opening of a spiritual path, if you will. I didn't understand that at the time. But Sister Elaine shared a couple of things with us, shared a lot of things with us, but a couple of things that just stand out in my mind from our week's visit there. And one of the things was, she said, you both might want to look into the difference between being willful and being willing. And I didn't have a clue what she was talking about when. I mean, I was an entrepreneurial publisher, and Martha was in politics, and if any two willful enterprises, those are. And the other thing she told us is, as we were leaving, that you no longer belong to yourselves. You now belong to God, and you need to learn to love God and need to learn to love yourselves. And that was sort of an opening of the spiritual odyssey that my book describes. And it was just, and there are a lot of things learning down the road about forgiveness, bitterness, not hanging on to past hurts on Martha's part as well as on my part. And I could go on, but that gives you an idea of what I'm talking about there.
Well, people can live through Alzheimer's disease without spirituality, but with it, the living gets to be a lot better, even though you still have the suffering.
Yes. And one of the tragic statistics is that many caregivers will burn out and die before their loved ones. I don't know the exact number, but it's too many. And, you know, just while we're talking a bit about statistics, when there are 5 to 6 million people who've been identified in the United States with Alzheimer's disease. And there's another 20 million caregivers, primary and secondary caregivers in families who are dealing with this. So you've got 25 to 26 million people who are being directly affected right now today. And if the Alzheimer's were a state in this country, the state of Alzheimer's would be the third largest state in the country behind California and Texas. And it's just an overwhelming kind of disease. And people just don't understand that they're getting burned out until just they are burned.
Yes, it's quite a problem. The book you've written, A Path Revealed, how is that going to help caregivers?
First off, my book is not a caregiver's guidebook. There are plenty. The book came out a few years ago, and as I was surveying the landscape, there were a number of good caregiver guidebooks of how to deal with a situation if your wife doesn't want to eat, or if she isn't making sense to you, or whatever. My book, Alzheimer's, is the context of my book. The focus of my book is the spiritual odyssey that we went through. A lot of people describe this kind of thing when as a journey. I was for a while, but as I was thinking about it, I was saying, you know, the word journey is just, it just sounds too planned and too tame for what we went through. Odyssey sounded more appropriate. And in the classical sense of an odyssey, one day you wake up in a foreign land and you are hurt, you are confused, and you are lost. And you want to get back home as quickly as you can. And you'll do anything to get home. And when you do get home, that is, if you do get home, you find that home is not the same place as when you left, and you are not the same person. And that's, I feel, as I'm even describing that right now, I feel that in my gut. That's just what we went through. And there was just a lot of support from spiritual mentors, people who, and I'm not talking about people who say, well, this God's will, or it's things will be good for you and whatever else. I'm talking about people who are very authentic and very attentive and very tuned in to where we were and what we were having to go through. And so the book is a spiritual odyssey that someone in another crisis, not Alzheimer's, could probably pick up some stories and anecdotes that could be of value to them as well. And our story is not someone else's story. But as I've talk with people on their stories, I've just picked up good ideas and whatever. And so that gives a pretty good rounded outline, I think, in terms of what I tried to accomplish with our book. I tried to be as honest, as authentic as I knew how in terms of the symptoms we had to deal with and sort of what we came across that was of value to us. I mean, I describe in the book three or four things that were just the hardest things that I ever had to go through with Martha. The first thing was just getting the diagnosis. Another thing was having to take the car keys away from Martha. I felt like I had pulled Martha's heart right out of her breast. And a third thing was one day I was downstairs getting breakfast ready, and I heard this thud upstairs. I ran upstairs, and there was Martha on the floor in a fetal position, curled up in a full seizure. And I had never seen anybody in a full seizure before. And I really didn't know what to do. I mean, as a Boy Scout, I remember reading some things about that. So I just made sure she wasn't swallowing her tongue, and I just held her in my arm. It seemed like it went on for ages, but it probably was no longer than for a minute. And then I called 911 to get there as quickly as I could. So it's just, as I said, I'm just trying to be authentic in the book, but at the same time trying to point to some solutions that we were able to come up with.
Now, in addition to the book that you've written, you are involved in other aspects of the disease, is that right? In society?
Yeah, I started writing a blog back in 2015, a year before my book was published, and have written it up until about a year ago. I had some illnesses and health issues that I've been having to deal with. I just haven't written it for the last year, but I've kept the archives, and anybody can go back through and read those. I hope to be able to crank this blog back up in the near future. I've written about our experience with this blog, and I've interviewed others who've gone through it. I've written about a doctor up in Tennessee who's dealing with mild cognitive impairment, which is sort of a prelude to Alzheimer's. Talked to a neurologist in Alabama whose father had Alzheimer's, and sort of how he went through a deep, deep depression, the son did, this neurologist, and how he resolved that and where he is. And so there are a lot of stories that I share in my blog post. It can be found at
Carlen Maddux, CarlenMaddux.com. And if you sign up for it, my archives will come up and that you can link into them and just go back in the last, back into 2015 for anything that may catch your eye and be of interest to you.
One of the things that struck me, because I'm an artist, is that even though your wife didn't have any formal training, she started painting. During what part of her disease was she able to paint?
Martha had never painted before in her life. Martha was an outdoors girl, very energetic. She liked tennis. She liked hiking. She liked, as I said, she liked politics, civic activities, being involved with people and whatever else. When she was diagnosed, Martha's confidence just disappeared. She had always been a very confident woman. It just dissolved. And about 2 years into the disease, our sister-in-law, Keke, came to Martha and encouraged her to get into a watercolor painting class with Keke. And because Martha really liked Keke, I think that's why she did it. But soon, Martha just really started liking the painting. And she would have me go out to the craft store and start bossing me around, say, I need to get this and I need to get that. And I just loved it. I began to see her confidence come back. I have several paintings on my blog under the section called About that would give you some indication. I remember her teacher coming to me at one point and saying, Carlin, I do not know where Martha's coloration of these paintings is coming from. So this is not something I can teach or not something anybody can teach. And it's just apparently just unfolded from somewhere deep within Martha. And this went on after about 3 years. It finally just disappeared when. Those were a good 2 to 3 years. Good for me, good for Martha, her confidence, good for our children to see her. I know that KK put on an art show at their house with KK's artwork and Martha's artwork. And a few people even bought some of the artwork. And oh boy, that put Martha over the moon. And it was just great. That was just great healing, great therapy to see that.
Well, I looked at those paintings and the self-portrait I really like. Too bad.
That's my favorite.
Yeah. Too bad I couldn't buy it from you.
No, you can't. That's not for sale.
At any rate, I really like that painting.
Thank you.
So we've talked about a number of things about Alzheimer's. I'm sure I probably missed an important question, but before we close, is there anything else that you would want to talk about anything?
Yeah, I would just encourage any care partner, any caregiver. You've heard this probably until a point, it's a cliche, but it's just absolutely critical. Whatever you need to do to take care of yourself while you're taking care of your partner or your loved one, do that. Get the exercise you need. Invite friends or family in to give you the respite that you were talking about and we were talking about. And I've still come across too many people who say, well, I can do it, and they just worn themselves down to a nub. And that's just really important. And just the last thing in terms of just a little plug on my book, It can be found on Amazon under my title, my name, Carly Maddox, and I spelled it out earlier, CarlenMaddux. A path revealed how hope, love, and joy found us deep in a maze called Alzheimer's. And it is something that we didn't go looking for. It's something that we somehow stumbled across and came into these areas. I mean, we didn't get into the discussion about meditation, but that was real critical. But I think our time is a little short on that right now. When?
But you would strongly advise people to meditate, would you not?
Yes, I would. I mean, the Sister Elaine that I mentioned at the beginning said we ought to check that out. And so I did. And the Presbyterian minister who sent us to her had directed us to a Father John Main, a Benedictine monk, who had, he said it's about as simple an approach of meditation and a authoritative approach that he had encountered. Father John Main is dead at this point, but his practice can be found on a website called WCCM, World Community of Christian Meditators. And it is very simple, and I'm still using it today, 25 years later, just on a daily basis. It's very helpful today.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, it's been really nice to have you on the show today and to talk about Alzheimer's disease and your book, A Path Revealed, is a book that I recommend for people to pick up. My mission, or my purpose in life, is to spread the message that there is a cure for every addictive behavior. And this is a spiritual cure, and the treatment program is profiled in my book, Freedom from Addiction 3. Now, I don't recommend you buy the book because the publisher has gone out of business and they're keeping the proceeds from the sale and not giving it to me. So what I did was I wrote Freedom from Addiction 4, the final message. It is getting ready to be published within a week. So don't buy 3. Wait for 4, and we will tell you on the podcast how you can get your hands on it. But do tell all your friends and neighbors, family, and all the people that you know about the podcast, www.freedomfromaddiction.libsyn.com, because they can get a wealth of information. It's a high-content program. It gives you a wealth of information that will help you with your daily life. So, Carlin, thanks again. It's been great talking with you.
Wynn, thank you, and have a good Christmas and a meaningful one.